Hello and welcome to Simplicity Talks, a conversation exploring the issues and trends in the world of business and brand through our unique Siegel&Gale lens of simplicity. I'm Mitchell Cooper.
And I'm Rob Costello. So the educational landscape is changing, from the musings of Plato and Socrates to TED and edX. An industry that stretches back through the eons of time seems to be experiencing its fair share of changes and challenges. In the UK, university debt has ballooned to nearly £12 billion over the last 6 years, while student satisfaction rates are falling each year in the face of high tuition costs, difficulties with housing, and ultimately an overall sense that students are being ripped off. In fact, some of the steepest declines in satisfaction rates are from some of the most established institutions in the UK. And additionally, the pros of the once revered MBA are cracking in light of, again, costs, anti-immigration sentiment, which is scaring off international candidates in the US, and a greater focus on work and life experience rather than the continued years of education at extortionate prices.
So against this backdrop of radical shifts in the way we relate to learning and personal development, the increasing commoditization of education and technology altering the way we actually learn, we want to ask what educational brands and professional development organizations can do to not only survive, but to thrive. We want to explore who is delivering exceptional educational experiences and figure out if brand can be a North Star to help education institutions navigate these uncertain waters. Two figures who have a lot of insight in this space are Mike Scott, who leads our design team here in Europe, and Will Bosanko, our brand associate.
Very nicely said there, Mitch. Bosanko. Very nice. Thank you.
Thank you, Mitchell.
Well, look, great to have you both on. Mike, you have a fair bit of experience, a lot of experience working within the education sector. Will, as a relatively recent...
Crack off the scene.
You know, I think it's important that we kind of open up and get...
You make me sound like I'm 50 years old.
I'm 10 years out of university now, right? That's ridiculous, but yes, we are old. But I think it is really helpful to get a little bit of reference on your educational experiences, particularly looking at how you see your experiences in light of where education is now. Even if you can give us any insight into that, you know, what are you satisfied with or dissatisfied with how you see higher education being delivered today?
Or Mike, you know, how it's changed in the eons since you've in
Well, I guess my first thought, because we were talking about this earlier, and that the one of the things that often happens is that you have this kind of undercurrent of resentment from previous years because the fees and the structure will change year on year or every couple of years. So, you know, I think Rob and myself both were in years where the previous year had very minimal fees just because the government at the time had put that in. So you have this, you're already starting off on the wrong foot with a kind of unfairness. So if we're talking about people that then want to go into business and industry, you wouldn't really want those kinds of resentments and bad feelings. So I think that if education and universities can operate a bit more with a fairness, you know, and that's probably something that needs to kind of have a level playing field.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I was the first year to be impacted by the new fees. So back in 2012, we were the first kind of academic year who got that higher cap on the fees. And I think a lot of people took a step back compared to people who thought maybe they'd go immediately into higher education. People kind of took that step back and thought, what is the value I'm going to get from this degree? What impact will it have on my life? And I think there's a shift at the moment as well into more practical, maybe apprenticeship style courses that you leave with really like demonstrative skills and applications that you can take into the workplace. So I think people assess what value it will bring to their career more than maybe they did.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think it's something that we see across sectors, across industries, financial services or automotive, as the pace of change of new technologies emerging, a lot of the new measures that institutions are carrying out can feel reactive, fairly short-term focused. Everyone's racing to try and stay ahead of the competition. we see perhaps some element of that coming within education in terms of new programs speaking to, you know, new flexible ways of learning that the established institutions are delivering, as well as, you know, the new digital native players, some of which we've worked with in terms of developing new brand narratives. You know, what is the role of brand in all of this, and what role can it play in trying to offset some of the short-term reactive behavior and just trying to fight to stay alive?
I would answer that with, obviously, the brand is the reputation of the institution. So the actual various parts of the brand aren't enough on their own. But, you know, they kind of need to grow up a little bit and operate with a bit, you know, a bit more kind of smartness, really. They need to operate smarter. So I think if you go back to that previous point, especially what Will was saying, if people are starting to think of it as a kind of cost benefit, like, if you're thinking, oh, I'm going to spend £20,000 for this course or whatever it is, you're going to factor that in.
And I think it goes back as well to, you know, you're talking about what we see across the different verticals, across the different sectors. And I think what we see with everyone is technological disruption, right? Everyone is being disrupted by a move to more kind of technical or digital interpretations of what they've previously offered. And I think education is no different. So, and we're creatures of habit, right? So the way I communicate with my friends on WhatsApp impacts the way I want to communicate with my colleagues on Slack. The way I swipe or pay my friends on Revolut, you know, impacts the way that I want to have digital experiences in all forms of banking. So education, the way I consume content, maybe via a TED Talk, for example, on YouTube, that impacts the way I expect to consume learning on the go and, you know, be able to have access to materials at any point in my life. The need for structure is probably less prominent now. It's more about flexibility and being able to fit into students' lives at any point.
And within that, then, increasing competition through technological disruption, increased expectation from experiences, you know, really intuitive experiences with Google, Netflix, Spotify. What can these storied educational institutions be doing to try and keep up?
Well, the first thing to say would be that it's not apples to oranges in that sense, or it is apples to oranges, because obviously you can't compare a university to Spotify, but there is something in it about expectation and how people consume. So there needs to be learnings, there needs to be simplicity in that, there needs to be a focus in that. So there are definitely learnings that can affect the brand, and obviously design and messaging are all part of that, and obviously the strategy behind that.
You can see maybe older academic institutes, maybe the more prestigious in any market or any country, they're almost like the legacy brands, right? They are the people with the authority, with the respect, with the, you know, there's a whole host of things you associate with them because of their dated history. But in the way that legacy brands are having to adapt their offering and maybe take trains of or kind of facets of what they stand for and make it mean new things to new audiences, universities will have to do the same thing. They'll have to bring their offering into new digital formats.
I think that's really interesting, because that actually reflects a change that we've in the industry of branding have seen, the way people approach branding as a I don't want to call it an art form. But, you know, the way we approach branding, moving away from it being siloed and having kind of, you know, strategy, creative, digital, and instead looking at it from a brand experience point of view. And so what you're suggesting, I think, is really interesting, this idea that if you take what is the experience of being at Oxford or Cambridge, and how do you make that live online, offline, everywhere in between, in a consistent way?
And also opening up to some flexibility as well, in that, you know, if you're an institution, you need to relinquish some control on platforms like social media so that you enable community, you enable people to have their own interpretation of what it means to be an Oxford student. You know, we're in an age where people want to create their own identities and express that via these channels. And I think if you have a really restrictive idea of what it means to be, let's say, an Oxford student, then you might actually get more from relinquishing that control and opening it up to different forms of communities.
But do you feel that educational institutions have that level of sophistication within, you know, the decision makers to be thinking about brand and to be thinking about these fundamentals, you know, that they have, they've relied on their legacy, their heritage for centuries, and they haven't really had to, you know, push the boat out in terms of how they communicate, how they approach audiences, who their audiences are. Do you feel that there is that level of sophistication or that level of understanding of brand within these organizations?
I think they need to have that. I think they're probably, education is probably one of the areas that have struggled, as you say, with kind of resting on their laurels because they haven't had to, keep up. I mean, I think for probably maybe 1,000 years or 800 years, you know, you still had the same approach to a lecture with one person reading, and that just stemmed from there was one print, you know. Yep. And now that isn't true, but you still have the legacy of that. But there are clearly better ways to communicate, and people can learn.
I think it's imperative that they do begin to kind of address that and prioritize that. Universities are competing in the same way that brands compete with one another in retail, in all different forms. You know, you are competing for attention.
Yep.
You're competing to resonate with students and get your message across in a clear and consistent way, and brand's pivotal to achieving that.
That sets up a really interesting sort of dichotomy in the marketization and commoditization of the education industry. And Mike, I think you mentioned this earlier, where people are beginning to look at, right, if I'm spending, you know, £30,000+, it's going to saddle me with debt for the next however many years. What am I actually getting in return? And with rising unemployment amongst graduates, surely this is a fantastic opportunity for professional development institutions. I know we've talked a lot about universities, but there's that other side of education that's more vocational. And I was just wondering if, you know, Will, I know you, and Mike, in fact, you've both had recent experience working within this sector. What are you seeing for the opportunity for these kinds of companies?
I think it's important to remember that all forms of students are customers, right? So there's a transactional element to the relationship. So if you're looking for a particular skill set or a particular development in yourself to advance in your career, does it matter if it comes from a university or a professional development institute? Probably not. Mm. I think the importance comes down to what will provide me with the most viable skills. What access might that provide me? Access is a big thing, I think, in that some professional development, you know, institutes offer you connection or networking opportunities that perhaps universities aren't as tapped into. So it comes down to what the value proposition is of each of the courses you could go down will generate the most value for me as a prospective student. But it's remembering that students are customers. Professional development institutes are, in essence, on a level playing field when it comes to generating skills.
And I think with that being true, brand can then demonstrate that. So those challenger brands have to work harder to kind of get up there with people choosing them over university. So that's really where brand comes in and legitimizes it. But also, to your point about a commodity or a product, you want to say, oh, I'm proud that I studied there or got a diploma from XYZ. So the branding of it and its credibility and its reputation need to be there, and it can't just be a great experience. It needs to be a great brand as well.
So how do you build credibility
against the legacy players?
I would say the first thing is obviously, and this is true for all things, but having the confidence to be yourself and say, this is our stake in the ground, you know, much like Google did when it kind of started out. So they had the advantage of not really competing with many people. They were starting a pretty much a brand new thing, but they operated with a confidence. They had nobody to copy, effectively. And because they didn't do that, they were able to grow pretty quickly and exponentially. So all brands could operate like that and not worry and look over their shoulder and try to fit in. But I think it's especially true of challenger education brands.
And in any form of kind of rising challenger, or it's a disruption, right? So you're responding to maybe a need that hasn't been fulfilled by these universities. So it's looking at what's the open opportunity? Where can we disrupt what the current understanding of what it means to get a qualification? And there's a whole myriad of things that people associate with universities, which is a rigidness, it is a lack of flexibility, it's a high investment, it's all these things that generate some negative perception towards, you know, higher education through a university. And I think these rising entrants or these disruptors in the space can maybe address that and make universities become, or higher education become, part of your everyday life and feel a bit more flexible, feel a bit more tailored to you and a bit more driven by your experience and the experience of the student rather than the prestige and history and expected experience of what you get from a university.
Mm. I think that's really interesting because it also starts to stretch the conversation towards not just looking at your students as customers, as consumers, but also at faculty. A couple of the conversations that I've had recently with those within the sector have talked about, you know, that they have big issues with staff that have been there for, you know, maybe 20 years, that don't really feel engaged, that don't really know what the organization really stands for. They go in, they deliver their lectures and seminars, they leave. It's all pretty rote. And as we do experience greater levels of competitiveness, where, you know, not just within education, but across every sector, you know, established brands can't just rely on their legacy in order to bring in the best talent. What are some of those challenges and what are some of the solutions that educational institutions can be thinking of in order to be engaging the best talent and ensuring that they are moving and that they are dynamic?
I think you spoke about experience, and when a lot of people think about, you know, faculties and students have that in common, right? Mm. They have the... they're united by their experience of learning, by the experience of being part of a community. So I think if you're looking to maybe work at a university, work at any form of educational institute, you are perhaps drawn by a purpose, by a reason for being there. So whether that's you're really tapped into innovation, you know, if it's a particular subject area that you're building new, you know, you're creating new things, you're developing, education's about constantly innovating, constantly unlocking new truths, right? Mm-hmm. So I think if you're a faculty member, tapping into a really clear and lived purpose, in that there's evidential proof that the university cares about that, values that, and you'll receive that back through your students. If you're a university that takes a strong stance on a subject or a strong stance on innovating in a particular area, you'll attract the talent of the students. They want to be a part of that. It's this communal feeling of being part of something bigger.
Yeah, so I think it's just the classic point of branding on the inside as well as on the outside. So, yeah. You know, all of the talent that you recruit are, you know, inherently saying what your brand would say, or, you know, spreading that word and that message, and it's kind of becoming a whole picture.
But Will, in your experience, do you feel that, you know, when you were making your selection on which universities to apply to, did you get a sense of that distinction and that stake in the ground?
Yeah, I think maybe through a different way than perhaps people historically would have done, which is most people, I think their first touch point with the university might have been an open day or some collateral or, so, you know, some print material. But my first touch points with my selections was digital. It was their, you know, their Instagram, their social media accounts. It was their website. It's a whole different expression of what that university is standing for, where they're at in their journey, and what they're offering students and faculty. So in terms of differentiation, yeah, I look to what does the community look like there, what kind of values do they speak to in my particular subject area, how passionate are the people, how passionately are they talking about it, and if the university was standing out or unique in any particular way, which you can do visually through that medium.
It's interesting you say about your first touch point there and it being digital, and so for me it was, you know, a man getting on a train and travelling 200 miles to talk to me. Mm. And, you know, it's quite, again, it shows the age, which I didn't really think.
Didn't seem like a factor, but no, actually, but I guess, has, you know, some difference of experience.
So you could argue, you know, that's personal. You're getting you're getting someone that lives the values. You are getting someone that believes in what the university is about. But the way in which I would go about making choices is entirely different to how Will did and how people are today. So it's a great example of the difference.
But social media need not be any less personal. It need not, you know, show any less personality and a representation of your values. You can still do that digitally. It might not be a human-to-human interaction, but appearing human online is just as important.
Actually, in summary of everything we've really talked about, it's kind of aligned with our philosophy on branding, where we talk about, you know, if you think about your brand, it has to be authentic, true to who you are. It's got to be relevant. It's got to, you know, really apply to your various target audiences. And it also has to be different. It's got to be fresh. It's got to be innovative. And at the nexus point of those three things is where your brand should live.
Well, look, great to have Will and Mike on this episode of Simplicity Talks. I'm sure
great to be had.
It's been a pleasure.
We'd love to get your feedback on our website, seagullgale.com, or via our Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook with the handle seagullgale, on our platform around authenticity, relevance, and differentiation that also links quite nicely into our pillars of simplicity, which we go into depth within our episode on the world's simplest brand. So be sure to check that out and tune in next time.